الصالحون ومنا دون ذلك كنا طرائق قددا.
And among us are the righteous, and among us are others not so. We were of divided ways.
All right, so let's recite verses number 10 and 11 of this very beautiful chapter together, okay?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وأنا لا ندري أشر أريد بمن في الأرض أم أراد بهم ربهم رشدا
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وأنا لا ندري أشر أريد بمن في الأرض أم أراد بهم ربهم رشدا
وأنا منا الصالحون ومنا دون ذلك كنا طرائق قددا
وأنا منا الصالحون ومنا دون ذلك كنا طرائق قددا
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
And that was the beautiful recitation of verses 11, verses 10 and 11 of Surah Al-Jin. We bid you farewell, dear listeners. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran, for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. A very warm welcome. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and I'm your host, Zainab. Honored to be here with Brother Muhammad Liaquat Abbas as a guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Dear listeners, Brother Muhammad Liaquat Abbas is a research scholar in the Hawza Ilmi of Qom and also possesses a background in the field of psychology, making him a perfect guest for our program. Well, in this program, we discuss the topics and issues that are important for Islamic upbringing that can benefit both parents as well as the children. So our answers in this program are based upon the noble book of Quran and also the ahadith from Prophet Muhammad. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family. And we also take help from the narrations of noble imams. Well, to begin with, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that anyone who strives to rectify the people, the society, is among the best of the fortunes. Yes, we are talking about societal management today, societal participation. So, Brother Liaquat, when talking about our children, how do we encourage them to take part in the society?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's world of busy schedule, in today's world of technology, of social media, we see our youths, our kids, not getting much involved in the society or in the Husainiya or in the masajid, the mosques,
mm-hmm.
and participating in the activities over there.
Yeah.
I don't deny it completely, of course. There are places, alhamdulillah, where we can see a lot of participation as well. But there comes a place where a person should manage everything, like managing the Husainiya or managing the Imam Bargah example, or managing the mosque,
mm-hmm.
yeah, which is very important. So over here we have a lot of ahadith about management itself, like we have Imam Ali alayhi salam saying, good management prolongs one's term of leadership. So if a person is taking up the task of arranging a majlis,
mm-hmm.
okay, a congregation for the mourning of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam,
mm-hmm.
it should be done in the best manner.
Right.
Yeah? So managing how the majlis is going.
Mm-hmm.
And another youth, why I'm taking the name of youth is because we have learned from Imam Ali alayhi salam that when he was about 11 years old or 10 years old,
yeah.
he was given the duty to organize and manage the whole of Dawat Zul Ashira. That is the congregation, the invitation which was invited by the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam,
mm-hmm.
where he gave invitation towards his nearest of kins,
mm-hmm.
and invited them to the religion of Islam.
Islam, yeah.
So everything like the zibha, that is the sacrifice of the goat,
mm-hmm.
for meat,
mm-hmm.
and the cooking of food,
mm-hmm.
and arranging of the drinks,
mm-hmm.
water, milk, everything was done by Amirul Mu'mineen, Imam
wow.
Ali al-Islam. Yeah,
in
he was just 10, 11, you see.
Yeah.
At such a young age, he's managing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in later stage, we see Amirul Mu'mineen having a lot of responsibility managing
right.
the whole ummah. It's
yeah.
not a small thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this is how it
the management
it is started.
Starts
yeah,
from the
exactly,
beginning.
Like
yeah.
from small things. For us, even this is a big thing.
Right, yeah. Like, because we will never count on an 11-year child, and we'll say, like even if they show kind of interest towards doing things, and we'll be like, no, no, just go away. You won't be able to.
We will do everything. You can't do anything.
You can't do anything.
Of course,
right.
There was Prophet to guide Imam Ali. There was Hazrat Abu Talib, alayhi salatu wasalam, to guide his son. Yeah, there was. That was there. But the very fact that Amir al-Mu'mineen had arranged everything.
Mm-hmm.
This is a focus point, I would say. Yeah.
And we have a lot to learn from that. We'll take a short break here to reflect on the same, and we'll get back in a while.
Give thanks to Allah for the moon and the stars. Praise Him all day for what is and what was. Take hold of your iman. Don't give in to Shaitan. Oh, you who believe, please give thanks to Allah. Allahu Ghafoor, Allahu Rahim, Allahu Yuhibbul Muhsinin, wa Khaliquna, wa Rasiquna, wa Huwa ala kulli shay'in.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is the program Islamic Upbringing. We are talking about societal management in kids. How do we teach our children societal management or societal participation? Well, you said that in Islam we have guidances, like from Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family. Teaching Imam Ali al-Islam the management of the very first da'wat, of the very first invitation of his kins, to when he invited them to Islam. And then this indeed helped him to become a better manager, better leader later in the society. But the upbringing in this field was done by the Prophet himself.
Yeah. So over here, one of the qualities which is told by Imam Ali alayhi salam is he who is able to manage his own self truly understands management and will be able to manage others.
Indeed.
So over here,
that's
this
a very
is a beautiful
key point.
Yeah.
Key point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a person should manage oneself. If a person is not able to manage oneself,
mm-hmm.
then there's doubt over here that can he manage other people or not. And there's another hadith, a beautiful one. Good management acts as a support for one's subjects. And the downfall of leading politicians is due to their poor management. So
right.
The Imam is saying about downfall. When will the downfall happen?
Akka, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there are a lot of hadiths about
right, yeah,
management.
You also remind me one of the hadiths from Imam Ali alayhi salam, wherein he says that everyone who tries to improve his own self will be able to improve the others or the society.
Definitely.
So it's always starts from self. Like we say that charity begins at home.
Exactly, yeah. So over here, it's very important for us as parents to teach them how to manage oneself in
mm-hmm.
the first place. And yeah, when we speak about managing oneself, they have to see us as well managing
mm-hmm.
ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If the parents don't manage themselves, then how can they teach their children? Even if
right.
they teach their children, the child will be like, okay, the same is not seen in you.
Yeah.
This is what the counter question will
because
be.
Because they usually learn with actions.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So over here, management on a societal level, because I see parents, I'm so sorry to say, they don't participate in any of the programs. They don't want to actually step into society in the first place. So in this case, and in these scenarios, their children would not like to join in that society, would not like to participate in the programs in that society. Leaving aside, like, management is a big thing. They don't even want to participate in the given programs over there. You see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So it's very important that the parent first comes inside the society,
mm-hmm.
okay? At least participation is very important.
Participation is very important. Like,
and
when you are participating, then only your children will participate.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the second thing is, food distribution in
mm-hmm.
mosques, okay?
And
so
what is more with the food distribution? We'll give a pause here to our discussion and we'll discuss more after a short break. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Be like a friendly physician who applies medicine where it is useful."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are discussing how do we encourage our children in social participation. Well, you said it began with Imam Ali alayhi salam. If we look back at history, and Prophet himself encourages and teaches him for the first dawah, for the first invitation of Muslims, and then it teaches us a big thing that we can actually count upon a child as young as 11 years old, and this does give them leadership skills, because we as parents do dream of big things, but then we are not we don't know where to start it from, and we think that then we are confused why do not the results come overnight. So it starts, like, leadership qualities start as young as 11, like Imam Ali alayhi salam. And and you said that they learn with actions. Like, if you yourself are not participating in these events, how do you expect them to be a part of such events?
Perfect. And one of the things which is very important when we teach our kids about management is that we are not after perfection. We are not after the program going in the perfect manner.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we have a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, where the Imam says, the peak of good management is the employment of moderation.
All right.
So even in psychology, when we teach about having a good schedule,
mm-hmm.
okay,
excess of everything is bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we don't encourage the person, the opposite person, to fill up the whole schedule.
Yeah.
So there are blocks. Yeah. There
mm-hmm.
this time blocking system,
mm-hmm.
and once it's done, like the time blocking system is sorted,
mm-hmm.
we tell them, okay, from your morning till evening,
mm-hmm.
write down everything you do, and you have to allot timings for each and every
right.
single thing. So this is how the timetable is set.
Mm-hmm.
But we encourage them to keep empty blocks.
Yeah.
So that it's not overcrowded.
Yeah.
And once it's overcrowded, then that is when the person
confusion.
Starts to get anxiety.
Yeah.
And if it's not done, then the person gets upset or depressed, and he might even leave the whole schedule.
Yeah.
So keeping empty blocks is actually an act of moderation.
All right.
And of course, in the religion of Islam, we are encouraged a lot towards
about
moderation.
Yeah.
So we are not after complete perfection.
Mm-hmm.
We are after moderation. Where the Imam says the peak of good management, it's the peak to have moderation
right.
in the management. So this is just one of the qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And with regards to management, people might say, you know, the thing is, we don't get the opportunity to do management in the Imam Barga or Husseinia
mm-hmm.
or the
mm-hmm.
mosques and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The solution to it is the person or the parent should go
mm-hmm.
to the head of the mosque or the Husseinia and should speak to the person in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Let my child involve my child as well.
In the background, in cleaning rather.
Exactly, yeah. And it's important for other people who got used to it. Like this person ABC who does this work every time, like distributing water, is with this person.
Yeah.
So the person has to be generous by stepping down for a while, for a few days, and allowing and encouraging other people, like other youths,
mm-hmm.
to do this work. This is how they are going to learn. If the people who are normally doing every time, if they sit over there and they do the same stuff every time, then how can other people learn management?
So that's the importance. Thank you, dear listeners. Thank you, Brother Liaka, for sharing those useful insights with us. That was all the time we had for today. Thank you so much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
haven't spoken up yet. It might be too late for you. This is your call to say something and not let history judge you for what you should have done.
There once was a day when we were shadows in the street, paper thin excuses crumbling at our feet. Screens glowed brightly, selling fear and doubt. The truth bled quietly, seldom spoken out. But today it's on the news again that the Zionist entity has murdered Palestinians and burned their city. Savagery is in their blood, genocide their game. The world is watching live as they enter the Hall of Shame. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. America gives the go-ahead, then it sends in bombs. Israel calls it self-defense and murders without qualms. Since when has killing children become a source of pride? Silence must be broken if you want to turn the tide. It's time we made the right choice. Our lives may be on the line. It's time we raised our voice, chanting free, free Palestine. The police can do what they want to do, detain one or two. But thousands of millions are coming through, a move they cannot undo. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too
for joining us. Hebrew media, through its commentators and analysts, has discussed the Sydney attack against the Jewish holiday celebration, the complications facing the second phase of the Gaza agreement, the settlement movement in the Strip, the anticipated meeting between Trump and Netanyahu, and the Israeli escalation against Syria and Lebanon. These topics will be the center of discussion in today's episode with Mr. Ridwan Rizal, political analyst, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Mr. Ridwan. The Sydney attack, in which 16 people were killed and which targeted a gathering celebrating the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah, received significant attention in Hebrew media, reflecting the horror and magnitude of the operation. How can the Israeli political exploitation of the Sydney attack be understood today, Mr. Ridwan? And also the campaign that is launched, whether by politicians or even security officials, against the Australian authorities, accusing them of negligence towards the Jews.
Well, this is not true at all, because my personal information about the center that was attacked was one of the major, the main center of the Jewish community in Australia, and that has played a very important role in gathering or collecting, you know, fundraising for the IDF in Israel. And at the same time, that the influence of this center on the Australian politicians and political life is so effective and so goes back a long, long time in the Australian life. This is not the main question. The main question is to be raised and asked that some of the information were leaked about the attackers. One of them was served during Gaza war in the IDF forces against Gaza. Despite the, his nationality, if he's Australian or from Pakistani's origin, why was he serving in the IDF during Gaza war? Why did he do this attack? I believe the you know the answer about the, these questions, because the main public opinion in Australia has turned against the Israelis,
and that's why Netanyahu faced the accusations directly to the Australian authorities.
Exactly, so that he is trying to defend or to gain back. That's the Australian public opinion to support the IDF or the Israeli government in its act genocides in Gaza, because Australians mainly are peaceful people. They are a bit far from what's going around the world. They don't know much about the situation in the Middle East, but you know the massacre that's committed by the Israelis in Gaza,
yes,
that had turned the Australian public opinion against the story of the Jewish or the Israeli government.
So you don't agree that what happened will actually be a major shift in global opinion towards the Israelis?
Well, this is maybe this is one of the main targets that you know the Israelis are trying to use,
exploiting,
and showing, exposing themselves as being
victims.
The victims of the these kinds of acts. I can clearly accuse that the Mossad Israelis are behind this massacre, despite the lives of the, you know, lost in the Jewish community.
You mean they were aware of it, or they are behind it?
It's they are behind it, because if we recall back the assassination of the Israeli ambassador in London in 1982, that was used and is accused to launch a major attack of the 1982 invasion of Lebanon. So we are seeing now the similar scenario, the similar stories, which you know Israel is used to use, despite that they are not aware, they are aware, and they are willing to sacrifice few Jewish lives just to gain back what they have lost after Gaza.
But why choose Australia?
Australia, because for so many reasons, I believe, and it could be somewhere else also. We are going to see some similar acts around the world. Australia, because you know, the security tightness is a bit loose there, because you know crimes there is very low, people and armed control is very tight, so many people cannot just go and buy arms from the shop as in America. And those arms that they have been used by the attackers were not licensed, and they are not fully automatic. They are semi-automatic rifles, and that's why we can we see that the arms they have used did not cause many more casualties. Otherwise, we could have seen much more and many more casualties among the civilians.
Do you actually think that Netanyahu might exploit also the Sydney attack to carry out military adventures in the region?
This is the main reason. I think that Netanyahu is trying to find an excuse to launch a major invasion against Lebanon.
And use the Australian attack as a pretext? How do you link this?
This is it's very linked because now that he thinks that he will have the full support of the Western world again by exposing them, the Jewish, as the targets, or the civilians, Jewish in Australia and elsewhere, as victims.
Okay, so a very important factor also here is that they also accused Iran. Though Iran they declined any accusation, the accuse of involvement in the attack, despite Tehran's condemnation of it. Would they use it as a pretext to launch a war against Iran specifically?
This is the main purpose, because even the mayor of Sydney City was, announced that accused some accusations of Iran. Launched this accusations even before the investigations took place in after the the attack in Sydney. Mm-hmm. So this is they are trying to gather all purpose and all means to justify their attacks or launching a major war against Iran and Lebanon.
Okay. Hebrew media also reports have revealed that Tel Aviv is still refusing to begin the second phase before the handover of the body of the last Israeli captive in the Gaza Strip. Do you think that Netanyahu will oppose Trump's idea that was actually conveyed by his own convoy in the United Nations, Mike Walls, calling to move to the second phase even if the Israeli captive's body is not returned?
Well, before that, Netanyahu, trying to show himself in front of the Israelis or the world that he is so keen on the lives or gaining the body of one of the captives, he should remember that by activating Hannibal Protocol was responsible for the killing of all the captives, because all the captives were killed by Israeli air raids. And that's what led to almost kill about 80% of the captives. So now he is showing full responsibility and so keen on gaining back the body of one captive remained in
Gaza. But Trump opposes that. So what will happen?
I think that, we cannot predict. I think that Netanyahu, Trump meeting on the 29th of this month, will show that who is more powerful in the decisions in that matter. I believe that Netanyahu...
But before that time, Netanyahu will not move with the plan.
I don't think so at all. And I think that Netanyahu is going to America on the 29th to get to inform Trump about his next invasion of Lebanon and taking over or invading the whole Gaza, igniting another war in Gaza also. So, and I think that Netanyahu will succeed in that, and I don't think that Trump will be able to stop him at all, because I believe that Netanyahu is much more powerful in America than Trump himself.
What if the body of the captive killed in Gaza, the Israeli captive, was not found?
Well, there's a very high possibility that they will not be able to find him, even if they want to. So, and I think that Hamas and Islamic Jihad want to find this body, but due to the fact that 10,000 people are still missing in Gaza, it's not only a matter of one captive. 10,000 people still considered missing under the rebels of the air raid of committed by the Israeli Air Force. So how can if they are, it's very similar that you are just searching for a needle in a trash camp in this way. So
you think that Netanyahu is using this as a pretext?
Of course.
Hamas not finding the body of the captive that was killed by the Israeli shelling?
That was killed by the Israeli shelling, and maybe this one of the attacks could have, shattered even the body. cannot find even the full body of a captive. And that's happened because the Palestinians were buried their dead by pieces of bodies, and not even knowing those pieces to which person belongs. So they cannot be sure if they found a part of the body, they cannot be sure if it's for the captives or not, because what we know that most of the people who are armed Hamas or Jihad were guarding those captives. They were killed along with the air raids also. So we don't know what's happened.
Netanyahu's intention, in your opinion, is he trying
his best and desperate to find any excuse
to go back to war
and to continue his plan in the region.
Will he succeed in doing that?
Of course, he will.
Even if Trump opposes him,
Doesn't matter. Trump opposition for the war in the region will not be that effective on Netanyahu.
Okay, we remain in the Gaza Strip, where one of the leaders of the settler movement revealed that dozens of settlers managed to enter Gaza's territory in order to settle there and remained inside for more than an hour and a half before the occupation army forced them out. What are the implications of this settler activity?
We must look at it from all different angles, because we are seeing settlers not only entering Gaza. We have seen settlers entering southern Lebanon and they are trying to start building settlements there, and southern Syria also. They have took some points where to build settlements also. So we are dealing here with the doctrine of the Zionism, which is encourage the Jewish people or the racist Jewish people to have, that they believe that they have the right to go anywhere they want in their promised land. So they consider it as their promised land, and it was backed up by being financed by the settlements organizations, and nothing that will stop them at the end if they don't come to a point where they know that they are not allowed to go into other territories. They are already occupiers of Palestine,
okay.
And now they want to.
But how would such provocative acts affect the implications of the second phase of the Gaza agreement?
I'm not so promised that the second phase will take place in Gaza. That will not be implemented at all, because I believe that the war did not stop and the killing did not stop, and more air raids. But yesterday or the day before, they have assassinated one of the Hamas leaders, Ra'ed Isa, and we know that assassinations also continuing in southern Lebanon. Now we are seeing some checkpoints in southern Syria, inside southern Syria, and where they come to very close to the Syrian civil people,
yes.
And they have crossed those checkpoints. So I think this is an invasion all over Gaza, southern Lebanon, and southern Syria.
Okay, the anticipated meeting, however, between Trump and Netanyahu in Florida later this month is a major topic of discussion in Hebrew media, as it will discuss all the major regional files, according to a former official in the Zionist National Security Council. What do you expect to come out of the Trump-Netanyahu meeting that's expected in Florida?
Well, I think that the main purpose behind the Netanyahu visit to America is to inform Trump of his next move and next plan. And I think that we are going to see some escalations in the situation all over the Middle East.
But Trump is the one that called Netanyahu to come.
Well, Trump is in a very squeezed situation, because now we are seeing more and more support of Israel among the Congress, and we have seen and the watchdog, that one of the congressmen was threatening people or congressmen, other congressmen, from taking any actions against Israel. And that was his threatening in the meaning of threatening their life and their political future or political career. So now it's so obvious that there's a struggle going among the American people, and I think that the Zionist lobby, due to the power of AIPAC and other organizations,
yes,
has lots of power to pressure the President Trump and the White House himself. Because
the power is diminishing, especially after the latest global attack against Israel.
Exactly. So now they are I think they are desperately fighting to keep the American government under the main influence of the American situation, to support fully support of the Israeli government, because the Israelis or the Israeli government are aware that the public opinion in America is shifting away from full support of Israel.
Okay, but do you think that Trump and Netanyahu see eye to eye on Iran?
Well, I don't think so, because America is trying to avoid into going in a direct confrontation with Iran, because they know that their benefits in the region will be affected so much, especially if the Gulf countries are involved in the attack against Iran. And I think that Iran is not Ukraine, it's not Iraq. Iran is totally a different story, and the Americans are aware that it's going to be a very costly war.
So will this prevent Israel from attacking? A unilateral act, probably.
Maybe, because the Americans have no wish or no will to go into a major war against Iran, because not because of the benefit of Iran, but because they know that the Iran capability on occurring mass destructions to the Israelis, and the Americans in this way, especially Trump and his administration, are trying to protect Israel from itself.
Will they win or succeed in that?
They will try to.
Obviously,
they
will cannot
try
hold their actions.
They will try to convince Netanyahu that's not of his on his benefits to start a major war with Iran. They are trying to protect the Israeli from the madness of Netanyahu. I don't think. I doubt that they will succeed in that. But I believe they will try their best.
Okay, Mr. Redouan Rezek, political analyst, thank you very much for joining us in today's episode. It was real nice having you with us on
Thanks
the show.
Thanks a lot.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
ocean of dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Murarisi here with another special edition of this program, The Ocean of Dua. In this special edition and during this sacred and holy month of Ramadan, we'll try to talk about some parts of Iftitah supplication, and we'll be bringing you the commentary on some parts of this supplication. We'll be back again after you listen to some parts of this dua, so stay with us.
Alhamdulillah, الذي لا يهتك حجابه ولا يغلق بابه ولا يرد سائله ولا يخيب آمنه.
Praise be to Allah. No one can disclose anything hidden by him, and no one can shut the doors kept open by him, and no one who makes a request is sent away disappointed by him.
Dear listeners, the subject of hope and reliance on God was being discussed. As this part of the supplication says, Alhamdulillah الذي لا يحتك حجابه ولا يغلق بابه ولا يرد سائله. And in the last part it says, ولا يخيب آمله. And no one who looks long and attentively is deluded in his hopes. And we said that this part is saying وَلَا يُخَيَّبُ آمِلُ, that آمِل, the one who has hopes on him, the one who has pinned his hopes on him, will not be deluded and will not go astray. But the condition is that he must be a real آمِل. And we should not be like the ones the Quran is saying, يُخَادِعُونَ اللَّهَ وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَمَا يَخْدَعُونَ إِلَّا أَنفُسَهُمْ. So it is better to be truthful to God and not deceive ourselves. We should be wise, and the wise man is the one who purifies his intentions in supplicating to God. So what we do pretentiously from our duties and actions may possibly deceive people, but God cannot be deceived. If we want to change our condition, we must change ourselves. We must rely on God alone, or else He will leave us alone and we will reach nowhere. We must also bear in our minds that only He can be truly relied upon and no one else. It is reported from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that God the Blessed, the Exalted says, by my honor and glory, greatness and exaltedness over the throne, I shall turn into despair the hope of the one who pins his hope on another man, and I will cover him with the garment of contempt in the eyes of people. I shall keep him away from me and not allow him to meet me. Has he pinned his hope on other than me to solve his problems, while the solution to problems lies in my hands? Has he attached himself to other than me and knocks at another's door while the keys of all closed doors are with me and my door is open to those who call me? Is there anyone who in time of difficulties pinned his hope on me but I frustrated him? Is there anyone who relied on me on an important affair but I deprived him? So the servants must rely on God alone. Relying on God means to consider all powers to be from Him and to use them while bearing in mind that with His permission, nothing can be done. And what we say here does not contradict going to doctors and using the intermediaries. You must consult the doctor and abide by his medical prescription. But at the same time, We must bear in our mind that the healing power lies with God. Without the will of God, a doctor's correct diagnosis could be useless, and thus he would give the wrong prescription. Or maybe in spite of correct diagnosis and prescription, the sick would not be cured. This does not mean that there is no need to consult the doctor. While relying on God, we must also abide by the doctor's prescription, for it is one of the means and manifestations of God's favor. In any case, cure originally comes from Him.
The month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it, and whoever is ill or on a journey, then an equal number of other days. Allah intends for you ease and does not intend for you hardship, and wants for you to complete the period and to glorify Allah for that to which He has guided you, and perhaps you will be grateful.
So, reliance on God means believing that affairs and their elements are in the hands of God. He must believe in the reality that God manages all the affairs and provides all the means. And we must believe that in cases where no means are in sight, it is not beyond His power to create new means. He can also do something without any means. So, in no way does the faithful one cease his reliance on God. The one who has pinned his hope on God will not be frustrated if he fails through a certain mean array, be it money, doctor, medicine, and etc. Some people disregard natural means and ask God to solve their problems by supernatural means. But they must know that it is the will of God to solve our problems through natural ways. In this regard, God says, أَبَاللَّهُ أَنْ يُجْرِ الْأَسْبَابَ إِلَّا بِالْأَسْبَابِ. Allah does not want things to be materialized through other than their natural means. Yes, if there are no available natural means, God acts through supernatural means. For example, He sent down a heavenly tablecloth full of food and drink, kept Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam alive and safe in the fire, and many other cases. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to bestow on us the power and bravery to face dreadful events. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Straight.
to my heart. Hands raised high, only you can see. For no one knows but you and me.
Good night to all our dear listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Very nice to have you with us. I'm hosting you for the next hour. Stay with us into the early hours of this morning. We'll start this hour's lineup with Youth Station. The program is all about young people and addresses topics which are all related to young people. Our varied radio productions feature will follow.